direct. From Guano Productions headquarters in the Los Angeles Underground, it's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex. It's like honey in your ear holes.
Hey, welcome back to The Superiority Complex, everybody. Your new favorite podcast. Another week. A lot has happened to me, and that's really all we want to talk about. So we're going to get to that. But first, let's get to our crew today. We're a man down. There is no Jake. But there is a John who was not here last week.
Howdy.
John, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm great. You had your best friend, Pat Hazel, come visit. Am I causing rifts? I'm really trying to cause trouble between you and...
one of my best friends, yeah.
Your best friend, Pat Hazel, who you've mentioned... Yeah. And you said, please don't tell anyone else, but he really is my best friend. Pat Hazel came to visit.
It's weird. People don't use that when they're 12. They say, my best friend. And they don't really say that when they're adults.
From Salinas. He was down from Salinas.
He's one of my best friends.
From Steinbeck Country.
From the heart of Steinbeck
Country. And I trust you guys had a good time.
We did, yeah.
He was down
for 3 days, and we hit – it was an eating tour. As usual, it was an eating tour.
Now, those of you who are – if you ever are in the Los Angeles area and you would like to meet up with the Superiority Complex, first of all, you have to go through a pretty detailed vetting process. And then once we figure out you're okay, then – you can go on an eating tour with John Sandy. And let me tell you, it will not disappoint you. The man knows where to eat. That's like a – you have like a sixth sense for good restaurants.
Or a sixth sense, yeah. Yeah, we tried a place that somebody turned me on to just a couple weeks ago called the Pie Hole. There's one downtown L.A., like around like 3rd and Traction. But there's also like three others. There's one in Hollywood, around Hollywood and Vine. There's one at Orange Circle by Watson's Drugstore. There's about four of them now. And it's all pies. What a great name for a place, the Pie Hole.
Yeah. What kind of pie did you enjoy?
They have a Mexican chocolate pie, which is like cinnamon in a graham cracker crust.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of spicy. That's really good. And then they had a really good French apple with the brown sugar on top. Really, really good. And then amazing chocolate chip cookies.
Let me ask you this. Yes. Apple pie, with or without a slice of cheddar on it?
Yeah. That's for old folks. Cheese on an apple pie. I think you got to be over 90 to enjoy that.
Weird?
The same people who like rhubarb.
Yeah, exactly. Have you ever met a person under 60 that liked rhubarb pie?
Besotted Geek. Yeah. Stork from the Besotted Geek podcast.
I don't know. It's just not for me.
He likes rhubarb.
Yeah. And same with cheese on a pie. It just doesn't make it for me. Yeah.
Pie
he
or
also
cake?
Likes.
Huh?
Pie or cake?
Oh, pie. I know. Adam Carolla used to do that all the time. Pie or cake? Pie or cake, you know? Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's pie.
Paul F. Tompkins has a great bit about, he says, listen, when you had the food drives at school, he's like, for the hungry, what was always left in the box? Pie filling. He's like, you would never give away frosting.
Yeah.
It's always pie filling.
Conversely, it's easier to screw up a cake. How many dry cakes have you had, you know, that just, it's much easier to screw up a cake. Bad cake is memorable, you know.
That is true.
It's been a while since I've had a bad pie. Pie is pretty good.
I'm going to give you a point on that.
Yeah.
I'm going to concede a point to you. Patrick, how are you doing?
I'm great.
You look good, man.
Thanks.
You're dressed nicely today. It's a hot day in L.A.
Loose shirt.
103.
Feels good.
But you got a button down on.
Because it's loose. It
very,
feels good.
Very Bob Newhart.
You see some chesticle hairs?
Ba-ba-ba-da-da-da.
There's like three of them.
Yeah, you do have a nice chest.
You want to braid them?
Yeah, you got like that.
He's got them circled.
Larry, Moe, and Curly.
Yeah.
He's got a Sharpie circle around each one of them. 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. 1 and 2.
I check them every morning. Brush them.
Still
100 times each.
If you yank them, more will grow.
Yeah, that's true. It's like shaving.
Yeah.
It's
true. If you yank them, more will grow.
I'm not going down that road.
If you yank them, more will grow.
Nope. Repeatedly.
We're trying to be like home video hustle now.
We're off to a great
hashtag
start.
Hashtag, if you yank them. If you yank them, they will grow. Justine, how are you?
Good.
Your voice is almost back.
It's almost back, yeah.
How do you feel?
Better. I can almost sing.
Can you? What are you going to sing for us?
Nothing.
Do you sing a lot?
I sing in the car, but lately I can't do it.
Oh, God.
What do you sing? Mostly Beyonce?
No, it's mostly Disney songs.
What is your favorite song to sing?
My favorite song to sing?
Yeah, your favorite song to sing.
I like duet songs because my little sister and I used to do that.
Nice.
We'd always switch off. So we'd sing it once, and then we had to switch off on who was the guy and girl, and we'd switch that and do it again.
So, give us an example of your favorite duet.
Like we would do like the Moulin Rouge song.
Oh, okay. That's very Disney.
That or that's not Disney. Or that Aladdin song. Whole New World.
Whole New World?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I told her we should start singing the Frozen songs because there's two girls.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, now we can't fight, but...
My friend JP, friend of the show JP, who's been on here, the only guest we ever had who was hammered, she and I the other day were just talk singing. You Can Fly from Peter Pan. And then it turned up in that commercial. There's a commercial now for Disney with it. We were just kept going, think of a wonderful thing. It's the same as happy wing. Like that.
And then that's the way the commercial did it.
Yeah, exactly like that.
Think of a wonderful thing.
You can fly, you can fly, you can fly. Okay.
My go-to song is If I Only Had a Brain.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah.
I can while away the hours.
I whistle at work and people start picking it up. It's funny.
Consulting with the rain.
Ba-dum-ba-da-da-dum.
I'd be smart.
You could be another Lincoln.
I'd be funny. I'd be witty.
With the thoughts I'd be thinking, I could be another Lincoln.
Nice.
Elmo Lincoln.
The original Tarzan.
Classy.
Tarzan.
So we have a lot. There's a lot of pop culture. There's a lot in the pop culture that we need to get to before we get to our topics today.
We talk about pop culture on this show?
Sometimes.
It's been a while.
Well, we've had topics this month, which is weird. But it's been nice. We get a good response from the listeners. I don't think
we get a good response when this show is planned out.
Yeah, I don't think they appreciate our riffing, which is awesome. We're basically creating art on the spot. We are like jazz musicians.
If you don't like it, don't listen.
Thank you. That's it.
She doesn't speak for the rest of us. Please don't leave us.
You don't like it.
I mean, there are other podcasts.
You don't like it when we're riffing? There's the door.
Guess what? Yeah, the bread. That's it. Yeah, that's it. Please don't let the door hit you or the good Lord split you.
Please don't leave us.
That's so great. We need you. Please don't leave. No.
You know what? We don't. I don't need
We'd
you
be here doing this anyway.
Yeah.
if Renee had plugged the whole setup.
John and I would just be here going, Dr. Zayas or Cornelius? Who's your favorite?
Well, it depends. You know, there's another actor playing Cornelius in the second movie. Blah, 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 blah. Just foam at the mouth and keel over backwards. And another funny thing people don't know about.
That's how we're going to die, John. In a booth, eating a burger. Like with just aneurysm because we're arguing over like Shemp Howard or something. Just like
a lot of people don't know that he was the original Third Stooge.
Gummo was actually the funniest Marx Brother. And then he just sees up and
everyone's all Gummo.
It's like the animator at the end of Holy
Grail. I didn't know where there was a fifth Marx Brother.
Yeah,
yes, there was.
It was Gummo. It was Buster Keaton. Now, I got to finally see, if the fans of the show will know, that I've had the Hamilton bug for the better part of over a year now. More than that, maybe a year or so. And we finally got to see it last week.
Ooh.
It was every bit as good as it. Listen, it was a pretty penny.
It blew you away, huh?
It was. No pun intended, it blew us all away. Like
Did
the song
it take
says.
Like a whole paycheck?
It was.
Was it a whole paycheck?
It was $200 a seat.
Oof. Ouch.
$200 a seat at the Pantages, but we were basically center aisle. We were just off center aisle. Right on the aisle, so nobody – there was a lot of younger – not younger, but, you know, kids my daughter's age there. And there was one sitting in front of my daughter, so she had a perfect eye line. There was no – the seats were fantastic. The performance was incredible. And the icing on the cake was at the end of the show, they did a curtain call, and they're part of a charity called – I forgot what it's called – Broadway something. Anyway, they do a lot of charity work. They take donations and they've sent money to Houston and to Puerto Rico and Florida for the flooding. And they help donate money to AIDS research and different things like that. I think it's Broadway Cares. So they came out and they said, hey, we're going to have cast members out holding a basket if you want. Please, you know, we know you spend a lot of money on the seats, but if you have any extra money, please donate, and it's for a good cause. And then they said, we have a special announcement from one of our L.A. cast members, and it's the gentleman who plays John Lawrence. I can't think of his name right now, but I follow him on Twitter, and he plays John Lawrence and Philip, who is Alexander Hamilton's son in the show. And he came out and announced that he's a Los Angeles native, and at the end of the show came out and announced that the Dodgers were headed to the World Series, and the Pantages just erupted. So
wow.
I always have that lovely memory.
That's nice. Yeah.
They overcrossed two of my favorite things.
Yeah.
you know,
that's
along
cool.
with Raindrops on Roses and Whiskers on Kittens. So,
that's cool.
But yeah, I was a blubbering mess at the end of. My daughter was absolutely overwrought. She did not know what to do with herself. I could just see it. That it was the excitement of something that's her favorite thing, and then having it just be as good as it was. She really just my wife were.
Wow.
And then, you know, you see her and you get emotional. And you get so if you get a chance, whatever you have to do, sell a kidney, go see it if you can get tickets. Keep getting in that lottery. They have a lottery every day for $10 tickets.
Now, were they familiar with the songs from you playing the soundtrack?
Yeah, they...
So they knew all the songs.
My daughter and her best friend are obsessed with it, so she's on her own listening. My wife listens on her own now.
So they were ready.
We're all ready. I hadn't listened to it in about a month. I kind of went on a strict diet of no, because I listened to that thing pretty constantly for a long time.
That's cool.
But yeah, it's great. It was well worth it.
Wow.
And now here we are. A couple of days later, and the Dodgers have won Game 1 of the World Series.
Yeah.
First time in 29 years. Sorry for you, Patrick, but we're excited. We'll see. You know, the Houston's tough. The Dodgers came out, and just Kershaw was dominant last night. And but it's weird to think that by the time we record this next week, it will have been decided.
The only thing that this brings to mind is the day we talked about the Dodgers on the show last week.
Mm-hmm.
They lost.
Oh, maybe. So maybe they'll lose today.
Maybe. Just saying. That's
not
bad juju.
That's not the way it works.
Thank you, John.
Bad juju.
They lost the battle, but they won the war.
True.
Not unlike an Alexander Hamilton.
Everything goes back to
Segway.
Hamilton.
Thank you very much. But yeah, we'll see what happens. And here we are. And then we got some sad news this morning. Woke up to find out that New Orleans legend Fats Domino passed away this morning at the age of 89. John, are you okay? I know you're a big fat. If you only know Blueberry Hill or I'm Walking, explore.
Just pick up the greatest hits. Pick up a good greatest hits.
Yeah.
And everything will be on there. He had like 25 hits in 5 years. I think in 5 years he had like 25 top
hits. He survived Hurricane Katrina. I remember they had to rescue him from his house.
That's right.
He was trapped in his attic.
Right. Yeah.
And they airlifted him out. But he, if you only know I'm Walking and Blueberry Hill.
Yeah. Just it's all great. It's all great. He was amazing.
And what's great, what's funny is I'm Walking is kind of overplayed at this point.
Uh-huh.
But if you listen to everything else that's on the radio at that time, if you put it in context.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very different than anything else. Very New Orleans-y.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it probably turned a hell of a lot of people onto New Orleans music.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't really know New Orleans music, that was the gateway drug. Fats Domino was the gateway
then
drug.
Then from there you get into your Professor Longhair and all the stuff we talked about.
Bingo. Dr. John.
Yep. All the stuff we talked about when Rick Solomon was here.
Yeah.
And if you haven't heard that episode, check it out. It's a few episodes back. It's called The Real Deal. And we have Rick Solomon, who does our theme song. Or we use his theme song. He didn't do it for us, but we use his music. Check that out. But Fats Domino, we will be missed, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also found out we lost Robert Guillaume of Benson fame. I remember watching Soap as a young kid, and that's where I think he made his debut. And then he was Benson. And then
The Phantom of the Opera.
And he was the Phantom of the Opera. So very much a part of your – if you were around in the 80s, Robert Guillaume was seemingly everywhere. And sort of one of those actors who kind of elevates the part.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever he's doing, he gives a – touch of class to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're very much you know, very, very funny, good comedic timing, but could also do serious stuff as well.
Yeah.
And so check that out. Because Soap was weird that way. They would kind of do really funny stuff, but they would have these really serious moments, too.
Yeah, there were moments where it was kind of, like a soap.
Yeah, yeah. So we wanted to mention that because that was a big part. I used to watch Benson all the time.
Yeah.
I forgot the actor who played the governor in Benson, but he was really good at being a dopey.
Yeah.
If there was only some kind of device we had. To. Yeah.
I want to say Barry Bostwick, but it wasn't. That was Spin City. So who was that?
We're looking it up. He was only in that show. He was only in.
You mean he never did anything else?
I don't remember him from anything else. Missy Gold was on that show. I remember.
It wasn't
James Noble.
Okay, then I don't know.
James Noble.
I don't know who that is. That was the governor?
Yeah. Mm. But I always remember that show. Didn't do a lot of films, but I always remember that he was in Benson. I don't know why I just felt faded out there. I think I had a crush on Missy Gold.
Because she was
like
daughter?
She was like my age. Yeah, I got to look a bit. Speaking of 80s crushes, if you haven't listened to the latest episode of the Useless Debates podcast,
two episodes back.
Is it two episodes back? Oh yeah, because they just did disaster movies. John, would you consider Airplane a disaster movie?
Oh, the comedy?
Yeah.
You know, it's more of a comedy than a disaster movie.
Right.
I want to listen to that episode. They did a whole thing on disaster movies?
Yeah, it's really good.
How did they rate Poseidon Adventure, the original Poseidon Adventure?
That's one of the choices.
They all pick one and then they debate. I forgot who won.
I think that would have been my
Twister
top pick.
Twister was winning last time I checked.
Twister won?
I believe so.
That's
generational.
That movie's a disaster.
What else? Yeah. What else made the top?
Tracy Gold. Tracy had her sister was Tracy Gold, who was on. Growing Pains.
Okay. There you go.
So she, I think she was the younger sister. So I think I had a crush. A crush on.
So who won the 80s crush?
Oh, Alyssa Milano.
Alyssa Milano.
Yeah.
And who I couldn't think of till we started talking about it in the podcast group. Daisy Duke was my 80s crush.
Catherine Bach.
Catherine Bach. Yeah. I went straight from tinfoil bikini Princess Leia to Dukes of Hazzard. Yeah.
Wearing the Daisy Dukes.
Yeah. Yep. So that's it, guys. Okay, so are you ready? It's time to get into our – does anyone else have anything to add? Did we miss anything? Was there anything we needed to talk about?
No. Just I had a friend, a listener of the show, bring up that we missed a very iconic movie monster that we should have brought up, and it's Leprechaun from the Leprechaun movies.
Oh, Brent from Home Video Hustle would agree because he likes Leprechaun in the Hood.
Where's me pot of gold?
It's like, yeah,
he's the monster?
Yeah, it's a good one.
Oh, John, you know what you missed last week? We asked a question. We asked everybody what their childhood fear was. Like, did you have a fear of something as a child that scared you? So my example was like I was afraid of mannequins because of that Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like that was something that really – I was afraid of being locked in a store after hours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was my childhood fear. Did you have anything like that when you were a kid?
I can't think of anything.
Because John's not scared of anything.
I'm going to tell you
something. Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to tell you something that will make you laugh and nobody else because nobody else knows this. My uncle, my mom's youngest brother, had a paralyzing fear. He would cry anytime Andy Devine would appear on television.
Why?
I don't know.
The voice?
I don't know.
You mean you'd cry as an adult or as a kid?
No, as a kid.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a weird voice. I can kind of get that. That's a very strange voice. And there was like some sort of like the urban myth, or maybe it was true, was that he had that voice because he like choked on a popsicle stick or something. You know, there was like an urban myth that there's like an Andy Devine museum in some desert somewhere. They got the popsicle stick and all that stuff. You know?
If you don't know who Andy Devine is, look him up. He had like a weird. He was
very hoarse voice.
What was he best known for?
Well, he was in Stagecoach. He's one of that's the first big John Wayne movie. Check out Stagecoach. And but, he always had this sort of raspy kind of like, gee, Mr. Deputy, sort of.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it justice, but he got a very one of a kind raspy hoarse voice.
And really huge eyebrows.
And kind of chubby. And he was around forever. He did a lot of westerns, kind of like Slim Pickens. The voice is a little like Slim Pickens, only even more hoarse and raspy. And he was always like sort of like the kind of like the comedic sidekick.
Yeah. Andy Devine. So check him out. But anytime he would appear on television, my mother to this day will burst out laughing because he
– I get that. Yeah. That voice is very unsettling. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Creepy.
All right. Well, speaking of creepy stuff, I asked everybody
– segue.
What is something that you read anytime? It could be – it could have been yesterday. And now – okay, I know. People on Twitter, I know you're the scale – and your last bank statement and all that. No, we're talking about...
No, seriously, folks.
We're talking about like a novel, could be a graphic novel, could be something that you read. Like what is the scariest thing you've read? You know, or something good. I want what we're basically doing is recommending something creepy to read. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick, you look like you have something to say.
I have like a couple things that came up, but the first one was actually already on Twitter. One of our listeners posted it. I think it was another podcast, and I'm trying to remember who it was.
We're gonna get to everybody's.
But it's the scary story ones.
Stories to tell in the dark.
Those used to freak me out when I was a kid because I used to read them, and they're just like the creepy cover with all the ink splatters and stuff like that.
Who did that? Who put those together? Is that R.L. Stein or
no? It wasn't R.L. Stein.
Someone did a thing. They just had like
they're coming back. I think.
Yeah, Tawny talked about it. Someone did a whole thing. like an art installation of all the pieces used in those. Because they're really intense drawings.
Scary, all the paintings.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. The author was Alvin Schwartz. And let's see.
May the Schwartz be with you.
May the Schwartz be with you. So it was folklore, and he drew heavily from folklore and urban legends. The first volume was published in 1981, and the books have subsequently been collected in both box set and a single volume. I think I may have read, because there's a story that I'll get to, and it may have come from one of these books if they were publishing them. I didn't realize they had published them that early, because it seems to be the generation behind me that mentions these books a lot. But when we get to mine, I'll tell you guys the story. So is that what you would say, just those books in general?
Yeah, they're pretty creepy. I mean, that was one of the things that like first popped up to my mind when you brought that up. Right. Those are really creepy and scary.
Okay. What do you got, Justine?
I don't read scary books. I've never read a scary book before. I've only read – the only thing that freaked me out in – I think it was in high school is when I read Lovely Bones and She Got Murdered.
Ugh.
Have you seen that movie?
No, but I – see, again, this is what bothers me.
Just hearing the synopsis freaked me out. Yeah. I didn't want to see the movie based on the description.
But like reading that she was already dead and then you find out like what happens to her, how she got murdered, and it's just like – that one was – I was just kind of freaked out from
that. Well, there you go.
That's – see, that's, that counts.
But I don't read books like that.
Really. Yeah. John, what do you got?
Well, it's – I guess the scariest thing I've ever read isn't really a horror novel. I mean, I've read a lot of Stephen King that was pretty unsettling, but the one that really scared me and stuck with me was 1984.
Oh.
The first time I read it. That stuck with me a long time. That's one scary book. So it's not really a horror novel, but it scares the hell out of you, and it stays with you. It really stays with you. When you – yeah, so.
When I was a kid, I had a book. I used to be obsessed with, like, cryptozoology when I was a kid. I used to read all the Reader's Digest, like UFOs.
What is that?
The study of like strange monsters, like Bigfoot, Loch Ness monster. You remember in the 70s?
Oh, yeah.
That was like a big thing after like Chariots of the Gods and that. There was a whole.
There was always a movie on Bigfoot.
Yeah. There was like In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. Yeah. They had all that stuff. So when I was a kid, all that stuff was readily available. But I would read from there. I got into like. I never read a lot of Stephen King novels, but I read a lot of his short stories. Mm-hmm. I think I was pretty much a fraidy cat when I was a kid, and I didn't have the stomach to read an entire like scary novel
or like 1,000 pages.
But I would read a lot of short stories. I like to read them.
And he's got quite a few collections.
Yeah, I remember reading the Night Shift.
Yeah,
was one.
Yeah,
but there was a scary story I read that was supposed to be based on fact. It may have come from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. It was about a boy in I'm going to guess the 19th century. Sent out, they lived out in the forest somewhere, so it's, the frontier. He's sent out in the middle of a cold winter's eve to fetch water from the well. And there are cries heard from the house of, and this was told as like an actual, there are cries from the house of, help, help, they've got me, they've got me. Everybody runs out, and the boys. Tracks are found leading to the well, but they stop halfway to the well and there are no other tracks. So the implication is that he was carried off by something.
It flies.
Wow. And the bucket is laying there. He never made it to the well. The tracks just stop. But his last words were, help, help, they've got me, they've got me. And I was probably around 9 or 10 when I read that. And that to me that was like the most bone chilling thing I'd ever read up to that point. And I cannot find that story anywhere because I probably closed the book and threw it across the room. That's real, I'm not going to lie.
Burned it and never saw it again. You're like, no.
So it'd be tough to track down because it was part of an anthology.
It was probably part of an anthology, but I think it might have been part of the Scary Stories because that would have been right around the same time.
Some scary ones,
like 81 is like I'm 10 years old. It's right in there. So maybe like. Could have been right in there.
Wow.
Could have been a part of another short story collection. But I remember it was written as, hey, this really happened, and this is a disappearance that was never solved. It was one of those things. I can't remember to this day, but I remember reading it. I still remember the goosebumps I got from reading it, and it was really, really – it did a number on me. You know what I mean? What else you got, Pat?
Telltale Heart.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
My dad's house when I was growing up, we had hardwood floors, and they creak really bad. So as you, like, walk through the house, you can hear the creaking, and, like, just always reminded me of the beating heart. And just,
yes.
Yeah, Poe's amazing because he can make you uncomfortable just by the choice of words. He'll come up with some word and he'll go, nah.
And it's still to this day, like, his stuff is creepy.
It really is because a lot of it is like premature burials. He's really got a thing about
the cask of Amontillado. Yeah. He's like walling the guy up in the.
Yeah, even the black cat. The wife is in behind the wall with the cat behind the wall. And he's just got a thing about that, you know?
That was a big fear back in those days.
Sure, because, you know, with science being what it was, you couldn't be 100% sure that they were dead. You know, you do stuff like mirrors.
They were mostly dead.
Only mostly
Only
dead.
Mostly
what
dead.
What was it, Magic Max?
Yeah. You needed some nice mutton, lettuce, and tomato sandwich.
Good luck storming the castle.
Justine, so you don't read, so you're out of this one, Justine.
Why would I want to read something scary? I'm already freaked out by the dark.
You listen to a podcast about murders.
Well, yeah.
There is that.
I'll read about murders.
Comic books, maybe?
Oh, we love, there's a comic, we can recommend that.
But that's not scary.
It's good horror, though.
It is pretty good.
Yeah, so
anyone has a slightest interest in comics and they say, where do I start? I ask them, do you like horror? And they say yes. And I recommend, what do I recommend, Patrick?
What was it called? It's called Walking Dead, right?
Lock and Key.
Lock and Key, LOCKE and Key.
It's great.
It's a 6 volumes. It's written by Stephen King's son, Joe Hill, and the art is fantastic. And I can't think of the artist's name. He's from Chile. But if you are just dipping your toes or you just want to read a good standalone scary story, it's now collected in 6 volumes. The art is fantastic. And it is really, really good. And it's a really unusual story about
very Lovecraftian.
It's really
It is very, very Lovecraftian.
It's creepy.
Yeah, really good. So check that out. John, do you have anything else that you like to read that was frightening?
That's at the top of the list. Misery was pretty freaky.
There's a lot.
Reading Misery. Before I saw the movie, reading
Stephen
the book,
King made a lot of the list. So let's go to the Twitter.
Oh, also, another comic book, Spawn. Was always a good one. Maybe not as scary, but graphically very horror-esque and enjoyable, which was always fun.
That's good. Would you consider Hellboy horror, John?
Yeah, I had him on my list, but it's more fun and kind of spoofy because he's joking around a lot. Spawn has a lot darker themes.
Yeah, I guess it depends. There's some Hellboy it's pretty damn dark.
Yeah.
There's some Hellboy... you know, how many did he do? How many story arcs, you know?
Ridiculous.
There's probably about 10 or 12. And there's a couple that have very little levity. It's really dark stuff, being dragged to hell and back and all that.
Hang on. Wait. Keep talking.
The news.
The
newspaper.
Are you sure we can't include the newspaper?
The internet.
The interwebs.
The interwebs.
The front page.
Brave New World by Aldous Huxley.
Huxley, yeah.
Yeah, Lord of the Flies.
Do you prefer Huxley or do you prefer 1984 or Brave New World?
I haven't read Brave New World.
Brave New World scared the crap out of me because that's all about mind control and someone realizing things are wrong. And
we should trade. Have you read 1984?
No, actually, I haven't
read it. So we should swap. I'll read
Brave. What is it about? You never said what it was about.
Oh, I just figured everyone knows what it's about. It's like set in the future. He wrote it in 48, but he just flipped the numbers. It's 1984. And,
but it's basically everything that's coming to pass. Like the government is.
We say that, it's like a totalitarian government, a lot like what they were reading about the Soviets at the time. So in the future, in 1984. Everything, there's a camera on everything. You are being watched every single moment in your home, on the streets, at work. You are being watched and recorded every single moment, and there's no way around it. And then they have this thing where this is going to sound very familiar, the sort of like fake news where they will they'll remove somebody by removing them from all the history books and all the newspapers and every recording. They can pretend like he never existed. So when they eliminate the political opposition by removing every trace of him in printed material, you can pretend like he never lived. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because this one guy, Winston Smith, tries to find ways. He's working one of these office buildings. He's one of these pencil pushers who's working in the bureau, and he's trying to find a way. He thinks he's found a way to kind of like find places where he's not detected. He goes to like this antique shop and he finds things from before when the government took over, and he gets this sort of thing going with this girl, and he thinks he's not being observed, and he soon comes to realize there is no corner of, of the planet he can go where he's not being observed by the government. And then it gets really horrifying. I'm not going to say any more in case you want to read it, but it gets really horrifying once they're onto him and they get him, and the sort of tortures they to brainwash him, the sort of torture they inflict on him to brainwash him. And the way they explain exactly what's behind all of this and why nobody will ever be able to any ideas that you're going to get like-minded people to rebel and you'll overthrow this government, it's never going to happen. And just by the time you get to the end, it is frightening as hell. And so every year that's passed since then, I mean, that came out like in 48, 49, every year that's passed since then.
So go, pretty wow. Accurate.
Yeah, so by the time you get to the 70s and 80s, you're going, God, it's you know. And then – so what's happening now with everybody carrying around a camera in their pocket is it's sort of happening in reverse. It's not like the government is necessarily watching us, but everyone's got the means to record everything no matter where you're at.
That's right.
There's a camera in your pocket or on your laptop or your computer or at the traffic light. There is somebody recording you just about everywhere you are. You know, so it's not like necessarily the government doing it, but it's being done.
When you got to the podcast today, what was happening?
You were filming me. Yeah. I'm walking down the street, and you're like, I'm filming you for the Twitter. I'm like, great. Nice.
People love you. You have a following.
You say that. You I do. Think it's one person.
No, there's a lot of people
one
love
person in the Midwest.
Guys, if you like Sean Tanny, please
like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Please.
Anyway,
please use the hashtag I like John Sandy.
A truly frightening book. And that's the. You know what happened when Trump was elected? They said the week after the inaugural, sales of 1984 went through the roof.
Yeah.
Because commentators kept talking about it, like, Jesus, this guy's right out of 1984. So they said sales of the book, you know, for people that are much younger. Because it was the sort of book that sometimes you'd get that as a reading assignment in high school or college.
Yeah.
But they said, man, that hit the top of the charts again because everyone is talking about it. Like, well, let's see. People going, let's see what this is all about. They say this is 1984 with this guy in office. Let's see what it's all about.
It's funny, too, because like Brave New World is basically a juxtaposition of 1984 where it's a utopia and you're seeing the dark side of that where, you know, there's this perfect world where everything's wonderful, but, oh, wait, it's not.
Is that what the Feelies? And is it like a TV thing?
I don't remember. No.
Okay.
It's not.
What's the third one? There's a third dystopian novel besides Brave New World that's out
Clockwork
there.
Orange.
No, there's another one. Anyway. But we should swap because you haven't read 1984 and I haven't read Brave New World, so we should swap.
Brave New World's fantastic, though.
We should do it, yeah.
I read that when I was a kid growing up.
And then we have the Soup Book Club.
Yeah, we could do that, the Soup Book Club. No other podcasts are doing a book club right now, so we should definitely do that.
Just jump on that one.
Look at you making a face.
Just kidding, nerdy bitches. Just kidding.
You know what we should do? We should review the books they're talking about, but just post the episode a day early.
Oh, you son of a biscuit. You're great.
Just kidding.
Another great book. It's not necessarily the scariest, but if you like a good – if you want to see a book that kind of turned one genre on its ear – and invented another genre, Richard Matheson, who wrote some of the best Twilight Zone episodes, wrote a book called I Am Legend, which was later turned into a movie called The Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price. That turned into Night of the Living Dead.
That's
right. George A. Romero.
And then they did Omega Man.
And then
Will Smith.
And then
dead.
Will did,
I Am Legend,
but
yeah.
Read the book I Am Legend. It's great. It's about the last survivor of a vampire plague that takes over the world. He's the last man in all day. He holds up in his house at night trying to survive.
Yeah.
And then all day he's just out trying to kill vampires and keep the – and the twist of the story is he's actually the villain because the vampires all live in fear of him because he comes to get you while you're sleeping. So it turns into this whole thing where
right.
it flips
That's
the whole
right,
genre.
Yeah.
It's really great. So if you've never read it, it's not particularly scary, but
– It's unsettling.
It's unsettling and the way – You know, the things he has to do to try to stay sane and keep himself going and it's really, really good. So that's one I would highly recommend if you've never read. It's not particularly, you know, you're not going to drop the book in fear, but it's
it's really unsettling.
If you like the vampire genre.
And also you'll see what the root of, as you say, it predates Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
This is the ground zero for that thing. That you're surrounded by these things that just keep on coming, you know?
Yeah, it's the idea of just being able, not being able to, you're basically just holding up and just trying to survive as long as you can, knowing that eventually they're gonna get you. That you can only hold out for so long.
Yeah, that's definitely worth picking up.
What else do you have?
That's one of the most iconic books of all.
I don't think I have anything else.
John, do you have any other stories? I would like to recommend a short story by H.P. Lovecraft. I know H.P. Lovecraft, and people either like or dislike him. I'm not into the whole Cthulhu mythos and all that, yeah. But he did write a story called The Colors Out of Space that I read when I was a kid, and it was basically these, like a meteor lands. And it's basically what inspired the Stephen King episode in Creepshow, the Stephen King segment, but it's these, this meteorite falls and basically just starts rotting everything on this farm, and everything it touches, it basically corrupts. And, including people. So it's just really, really horrifying. And the last scene of the book is people coming to find out what happened on this farm. And you see the state that the people who are living there, the family who's living there, you see the state that they're in. And it's absolutely – it's one of the most – it's just a very unsettling ending. So remember, it's called The Colors Out of Space. That's color with a superfluous U if you're a Canadian or a New Zealandy or an English person. You use that U, but we fought a war to not to have that use that U. So, and we won, so we will not use that the superfluous U. But it's Colors Out of Space by H.P. Lovecraft. It's a very, very unsettling story.
I think that was – how fast can you look that up? I think that was made into a movie with Karloff, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If I got that right, like The Sorcerers or something. Something I haven't seen. Haven't read the book, haven't seen the movie. But I think that was made into one of the last Karloff movies. The Color Out of Space?
Yeah, it's The Colors Out of Space by H.P. Lovecraft.
Has it ever been made into a movie?
And it's – and guess what? There's a reference to Arkham. That's always the West Arkham. Let's see. The Color Out of Space. Film adaptations. The 1965 film monster, Die Monster Die.
Oh, that's it. Karloff.
Yeah.
That's it. With Nick Adams?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was it. All right. That's one of the last Karloff movies. Never seen it. Probably doesn't do justice to the book. But all right. I'll have to look that up. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem, man. We love you. You're a big part of the show.
Wow. Am I dying?
Dang.
You're talking like I'm dying.
So let's look at some of our Twitter friends. Gavin Kelly. Gavin Kelly, that's K-A – I screwed that up. K-E-L-L-E-Y, Gavin Kelly, underscore 13. He says The Telltale Heart by Poe.
There you go.
There's one vote for Poe.
I'll do it.
Jeff from the Kung Fu Drive-In, my bank statement. I think he was talking about my bank statement. Useless debates. The scale. Phil, you scamp. And then we have one Miss Neek. You are in trouble with Miss Neek, by the way, because she tweeted at you about the sheets, the bed sheet, and you didn't know who she was.
Yeah,
so you are in trouble. She says The Road. The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Oh, I've heard that.
And
yeah.
I remember she told me there was a scene in there, and I know what scene it is. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
Where she literally threw the book across the room at one point.
Wow.
Like, it got so intense, she like threw the book.
Wow. Now that's a visceral response. Yeah.
Triceratops, that's Tri, and then Sarah, like the name, Sarah with an H, Tops, that is Sarah underscore Rita underscore underscore on her Twitter. Insomnia, Misery, and It by Stephen King. Insomnia gave her nightmares. Liz from the Nerdy Bitches also. She says Insomnia is her favorite Stephen King. And she says they're all scary books, all the ones that Triceratops mentioned. Besotted Geek, It is an adult and scary stories to tell in the dark as a kid.
Yep.
Heil on Life, shout out to Noel. It's at Heil on Life. I believe it's at Heil on Life Pod. Yes. No, at Heil on Life, H-I-L-E, on life. When I was 14, I freaked myself out by starting to read Angel of Darkness by Charles DeLint. It opens with a skinned person clinging to life.
Dang. Yep. That's a graphic image.
Mirth's Monster Pod, and that is at Mirth's and Monsters. It was pretty – he says, I was pretty young, pretty much capped myself. That is an English phrase. So shout out to Mirth's Monsters Pod. Liz comes back with Stephen King's desperation. Maybe want to throw the book across the room and avoid it outright for 6 months. So I might have to read that. Eric of Aragon. What's up, Eric? Shout out to Eric. Don't know if it's the scariest, but Legion by William Peter Blatty, sequel to The Exorcist. Exorcist 3 is the film adaptation.
Ah.
Yeah.
That was that. So he wrote a sequel.
Yeah, he did write a sequel.
Legion, huh?
Useless Debate says he's not a big reader, but he does enjoy those 2-3-sentence scary stories you find online. I've read a lot of those little...
What?
There's a lot of people, they'll have like little things where they'll say, write a scary story in 2 or 3 sentences. And there's some good... Let
me really?
Find, I'm going to find some of those.
Wow.
2 or 3 sentence... This is good radio. Scary stories. I can edit that out.
But kinda, will you?
That reminds me of one time somebody was interviewing Stephen King, and he came up with an interesting couple sentences just in the middle of the interview. They used to joke that he'd be writing 2 books at once. You know, like he's ambidextrous. He's typing 2 books at the same time. He's always got some idea going on. And he was somebody was interviewing him, and he came up with an idea just while he's doing the interview. That like you'd be in a darkened room and you're reaching for the light switch, and when you reach the light switch, there's a hand on it already.
Yeah, that's right here.
And he said, "Hey, that'd be good. I should use that." They're just like, "God, this guy never stops." You know, he's doing an interview.
Oh,
he comes up
God.
With something.
Yeah.
Miss Carr at Woolen _ Hat. Adam Neville, Apartment 21, was a really good read. The Zombie Apocalypse Fight Back by Stephen Jones was good-ish. Was good-ish.
Wow.
So those are some recommendations from our friends at
That's interesting. Starts
Twitter.
With good and then ends with ish.
Good-ish. This is from a website called countryliving.com. 13 2-sentence horror stories that will give you nightmare. And, John, that one is in there. This was from – maybe this person – I hope they didn't steal it.
This was like probably 20 years ago. But if you're going to steal from – steal from the best.
Yeah.
I forget who said that. They said, if you're going to steal from the best.
This is from a user called Just Another Muffled Voice. My sister says that mommy killed her. Mommy says that I don't have a sister. See, there's a little 2-sentence horror story for you.
Creepy.
She asked why I was breathing so heavily. I wasn't. That was Calamitosity is that one. Oh, here's the one, John. You get home tired after a long day's work and ready for a relaxing night alone. You reach for the light switch, but another hand is already there. There you go. See? I can't move, breathe, speak, or hear, and it's so dark all the time. If I knew it would be this lonely, I would have been cremated instead.
Jesus.
Damn.
That was from a user called Graboid27. Graboids from Tremors. So those are our scary reads, guys. And, get out there and read some scary stuff. There's a lot of good atmospheric scary stuff. Doesn't have to be necessarily horror. One of my favorite reads, I break it out and I read it once a year. If you just want good atmosphere, it's not particularly a scary story. Arthur Conan Doyle's Hound of the Baskervilles. Mm. Great atmosphere. It takes place out on the moors. Very lonely, kind of a foreign landscape. And Watson is sent out there as a bodyguard for Henry Baskerville while Holmes is away in London. And it's very, very atmospheric. There's a lunatic on the loose out on the moors. There's all kinds of just – and it's not particularly scary, but Conan Doyle has a really – it's one of the most atmospheric Sherlock Holmes stories. So
where does that fit in? Was that the first, second, third?
So that was actually written when it's the third novel, and it was written – after he had killed the character off, and it was a way to bring him back.
Really?
So it happens chronologically before his death.
Oh.
So it was a way to kind of bring him back, and it was
to do a case from before the death.
It was a smash hit. If you ever get a chance, read it. Really, really good. Good atmosphere. Great atmospheric story. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's question time from Twitter.
Ooh.
So we're going to answer some Twitter questions. So we'll be right back after this break. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's count it down, guys. We are back in 10, 9, 8, 7,
starts so
6.
High. That's what she said.
5, 4, 3, 2. Welcome back to the Superiority Complex, your new favorite half of your new favorite podcast. It's question and answer time. We've got John Sandy here. We've got Patrick here. We've got Justine here. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Why are we so low key?
It sounds sort of like hermetically sealed.
What's going on? What happened?
I don't know.
You guys are so high energy.
Trying to make it sound like you were alone.
It was that long countdown that wore me out.
Yeah, that's what it was.
You want to take it from the top? We'll do it. Here we go. Ready?
Go ahead. And 3, 2, 1.
Action.
Okay, now we're okay.
10.
Son of a bitch.
8. All right. Anyway, welcome back to the Superiority Complex. Superiority Complex.
Soupy soup.
Okay, we got soupy soups.
Yeah.
I threw out a tweet. It's time for our latest feature, Q&A. We answer questions on this week's show. So ask away. Giggity. Halloween cues are encouraged but not required. Did I put the giggity in the right spot?
No.
Is this in real time?
It is. With Bill Maher.
If it was real time, we'd never get any responses. It would take too long.
Bill Maher. All right. Our friend Being Graphic, shout out to Being Graphic, we just saw you on the video. Who would you sleep with, marry, or kill? So F, marry, kill.
And, we did this before.
Okay, but let me tell you something. I'm not going to answer because Posada Geek had the perfect answer. So our choices were Jason from Friday the 13th, Freddy from Nightmare on Elm Street, and Pinhead from Hellraiser. Posada Geek, F, Freddy, it's just a nightmare. Marry Pinhead, he exists in another dimension, you'll rarely see him. And kill Jason for the rep you'd have if he stayed dead. I can't top that.
That's a great answer, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Shout out to Posada Geek for stealing our thunder.
Yeah, hey.
All right, so John, this is why I was playing that earlier. We were not going to give it away yet.
Okay.
Scariest, creepiest pop, rock, or rap, whatever song. That's from Eric of Aragon, our friend from the Rock Solid show. This is one of mine. We were just playing this on the break, and let me cue it up here. This is I, Ron Butterfly, in the Garden of Eden. And it got a DeVita. And the reason this is scary to me is because it was used to great effect in Manhunter by Michael Mann.
That's right.
Yeah. So, to me, I always think of that movie when I hear this.
In a Garden of Eden.
So that's my answer. What do you got?
I got Maggot Brain by 13th Floor Elevator.
Oh, are you thinking of Funkadelic?
Yeah.
Maggot Brain?
Funkadelic and the 13th Floor Elevator, yeah. They're together.
I was thinking of the 13th Floor Elevator. What?
There's a band called the 13th Floor Elevators.
Yeah, I think they're together on one album.
Oh, it's two songs.
I think so.
Back to back, okay. Because that was a band, too.
Yeah. Funkadelic, Maggot Brain. Let's...
Mother Earth is pregnant for the third time, for y'all have knocked her up. I have tasted the maggots in the mind of the universe. I was not offended, for I knew I had to rise above it all.
If you've never heard Maggot Brain,
or drown in my own shit.
I blame my brother for this one.
That's a good one. There's a couple of great, really good funk songs on that album.
It's just like that intro.
Yeah,
that voice
yeah.
is creepy.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what Justine's choice is. We can just skip her.
Thriller.
With the dancing zombies?
No, she doesn't like the intro with...
I don't like the intro. I don't like when he talks.
Vincent Price. We've talked about this.
I love that song. I just... As soon as it cuts and he's going to talk, I can't.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm like, dang it, next song.
We have talked about this. So Vincent Price still creeps people out.
Still Justine.
He would be very flattered that at this late date, that still creeps people out. His voice still creeps people out.
Yeah, I'm sure Haunted Mansion scares people just with the voice alone.
That's Paul Frees.
That's right.
But I think they were going to use Vincent Price in the Paris Haunted Mansion. There's a recording of him doing...
Oh, is that true?
They didn't use it, but they recorded him doing all that intro stuff at the Haunted Mansion.
Ah.
Yeah, and I thought the Paris one is actually set in a different setting. It's like a Blue Bayou.
Yeah.
Like a, not Blue Bayou.
It goes across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand.
It still creeps her out.
So good.
Terrorize your neighborhood.
Oh, you should play the Black Widow.
Whosoever shall be found
from Alice Cooper.
Down.
I wonder if that would always creep her out.
And it's such a fun song.
Yeah.
And I have to skip it because I can't.
Wow.
Vincent Price, man.
That's heavy.
Watch Last Man on Earth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's the hero in that. He's not even a bad guy in that.
John, what were you going to say? You had a pick right now? A good, scary rock and roll?
I got a really obscure one, but it's disturbing as hell.
What is it?
Are you the god of hellfire?
No, that's not scary. It's a song called Hamburger Lady by Throbbing Gristle.
You told me about this before.
I don't know if you ever played it on the show, but that is still the most unsettling thing I ever
heard. We have talked about this on the show.
But I don't know if you ever played it. And then there's a description of what it is, you know, on the album cover liner notes. God.
We're going to some dark places here, man. Scully?
Just imagine us driving down the freeway late at night, lights on.
And I want to say this is like late 70s, early 80s. So it's...
No. No.
Look at John, he's just loving it.
No, no, no. That voice. No.
No, thank you.
It's creepy.
In My Favorite Murder, they talked about that. What? They said the creepiest sound, and like they would do it where they would call on the phone, where all of a sudden the voice is just sped up.
Oh, yeah,
they said that's the creepiest thing to hear.
John, that's a good one. What was the one by Alice Cooper you just mentioned?
Oh, I thought it might creep out Justine because she doesn't like hearing Vincent Price in Thriller.
Yeah.
So years before Thriller, he was in another pop hit. Alice Cooper did a song called The Black Widow. And he worked Vincent Price into – he did a little rap in the middle of that. So very similar. So if you could find that, Alice Cooper, Black Widow.
Vincent Price.
And there's a bit in the middle. Maybe you can isolate it where it's just the bit.
John is telling you how to Google it right now.
Yeah, I know. It's like – I don't know if you can do this. You can probably just get the bit.
Alice Cooper plus Black Widow plus Vincent Price.
What I'm trying to say is maybe there's a way to just isolate his bit in the middle of the song. He describes what's so great about the Black Widow.
You said he raps?
He does a rap, the way they used to use the word rap.
Well, that's what they call his intro to Thriller, too.
They've been using that word for a long time. It's not actually like rapping, but he does a rap in the middle. So obviously, Alice Cooper loved horror movies. He loved horror movie icons, and Vincent Price was one of his favorites. He called him Uncle Vinny. He says, you get to know him. He's not Vincent Price. He's Uncle Vinny.
That's so funny. See?
That's pretty cool.
But I think what you were asking earlier about Alice Cooper – there was a story that Alice Cooper lived like in Holmby Hills or Beverly Hills or something like that. His next door neighbor was Groucho Marx. And he kind of got to know some of those old vaudeville guys like Jack Benny, George Burns, and Groucho Marx. He got to know them all. And they kind of got it. They got his routine. They weren't freaked out because they said, oh, yeah, we used to see plenty of that stuff in vaudeville. You know, a guy doing the fake guillotine or, you know, the Houdini. You know, they were like, yeah. We'd see guys with those kind of acts. There's one time that Alice Cooper came over to Groucho's house to borrow something. He knocks on the front door, and he slams it in his face. He's like, what the hell? And then he opens it again. It's his butler. He goes, oh, I thought you were Charles Manson.
That's really funny. So those are the scary – well, those are some scary – there's obviously very scary music. There's a lot of scary film music.
Yeah. But did you say yours? Oh, yeah. It was the Inagata De Vida.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's
it is a good one.
That's very creepy. Yeah. Let's see. Here's one from Michael Bagford. Shout out to Michael, another one of our friends from Rock Solid. Rock Solid people representing. What's your favorite Hammer film and or Universal horror?
Oh, wow. So that's definitely in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. John and I know Hammer, of course, cuz we're old. Patrick, are you and Justine familiar with the Hammer horror films of the 1950s?
Please, Armin Hammer, please the one explain. In your fridge?
No. Ba-dum-bum.
please explain.
Okay, so Hammer was a film. It was a British film company, and in the 50s, from the 50s to the 70s, they basically started doing their own versions of the classic monsters. So they did their own Frankenstein, they did their own Dracula.
The Mummy.
You will know them because Christopher Lee, who was Saruman in Lord of the Rings, which is fantastic.
It is good.
He and Peter Cushing, who you know as Governor Tarkin from Star Wars, starred in a bunch of these, and they were very gory for
the
time.
They were in most of them.
They were very gory for the time. Very, very.
They're in color.
They're in color and pretty good budgets.
And the things you were getting that you didn't get like in the 30s and 40s is they're in color, there's a lot of blood, and there's a lot of sex. In some cases, you're actually getting a little nudity. They're very sexy and you know, there's definitely things going on that you didn't see in the old Universal movies.
And they're all very – they're all pretty much very well done. There's they, towards the end, they get a little more
– Yeah, there's some of them – yeah, the early ones are pretty effective. There's toward the end, they start getting a little cheap. And Christopher Lee tried to avoid doing two – at first, there's like 6 years between the first time he did Dracula and the second time because he had a hunch he was going to get typecast. But then once he started doing it, you know, he did about eight of those Dracula movies.
Yeah.
But Peter Cushing is always in those playing Van Helsing. And then Peter Cushing is in a whole bunch of Hammer Frankenstein movies.
That's right.
Playing Dr. Frankenstein. And then they did The Mummy. He's in that too. And the soundtracks are always really intense. But basically what you were getting was a lot more color and a lot more gore than you were used to getting. That was what the so-called breakthrough was. So you see them now, and some of them hold up. Some of them are a little campy, but some of them really hold up. And anybody that's got Turner Classic Movies, they've been playing them all month. They've been playing all the old Hammer Draculas and the Mummy. Curse of the Werewolf they played the other night with Oliver Reed. It's one of the very first movies Oliver Reed ever did. He's a young man playing the werewolf.
Very nice. And did you like – they actually did in part of this horror film, in part of this the Hammer – I don't know, this whole series of films they did, they actually do an adaptation of Hound of the Baskervilles.
That's right.
Which we talked about.
That's right.
And it's a little less effective than – that's a really hard story to film.
Yeah.
I always felt like it would work better as a play.
Yeah.
Even the Jeremy Brett version they filmed is a little – there's not a lot of Sherlock Holmes in it, so it's really hard to know what to do.
Yeah.
Because Holmes is off stage for a lot of the action.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to build. So there's always kind of like these – they always – and they, I think in the Hammer, I think I remember they kind of resort to like some cheap kind of scares where it's like, oh, there's a tarantula and stuff like that. Christopher Lee, though, that one, and though does not play Sherlock Holmes, is played by Peter Cushing,
yeah,
who plays a very good Sherlock Holmes. Christopher Lee actually plays the good guy. He plays Henry Baskerville. So
yeah.
It's worth checking out, though.
Yeah.
And it's really, really the Watson in there is great too. It's a really good.
Who's that playing Watson?
It's an English actor by the name of Andre Morel. Andre Morel, who's if you saw him, you would recognize what he looks like. But there's a ton of great. Hammer horror. Just my favorite. Probably. I would say Hounds of the Baskerville. Hound of the Baskerville is up there, but I just saw The Horror of Dracula.
I was going to say that's my favorite,
which I had not seen in a while, and that was pretty good.
Yeah, it's really effective.
And boy, the scenes where he kills the one in her grave. You know,
yeah.
Her eyes are shut, and he hammers the stake home. Boy, that is still effective because she gets up and starts screaming, and it's like 58. There's a lot of blood
creepy
in it. It's really, really good.
He's really menacing too. You can tell he's like he got superhuman strength. He just leaps across the room. He's like an animal.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee does a great job,
and he's not in it a lot. He says he speaks a lot at the beginning.
Yeah.
He's very charming, and then for the rest of the movie, he's just kind of comes in and does his thing.
But it has Christopher Lee was like 6'5" or something, and better actor than people gave him credit for, and he really just turns on this sort of like animal power, you know, when he's playing Dracula. But as a kid, I always preferred the Universal monster movies just because I thought they had a hell of a lot more atmosphere.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I saw them first, but I just always felt like there was more going on.
And your favorite is Invisible Man, correct?
I'd say it's like a two-way – it's a tie between Bride of Frankenstein and the Invisible Man.
I go Bride of Frankenstein.
And they're both directed by the same guy, James Whale.
Yeah.
And just heavy duty on the atmosphere, and you also got a little pathos, and he always puts in some humor. And I'd say like Old Dark House is probably coming up number two because you got everything.
And that's someone that that's a movie that not a lot of people know about.
No, but it is now very available. For years, it was a lost movie.
And who is in the Old Dark House?
It's a who's who for English actors. One of the very first appearances of Charles Laughton in anything. And you've also got Raymond Massey and Melvin Douglas, Gloria Stewart, who turns up like 80 years later in the Titanic. She's young. She's the ingenue. She's this beautiful blonde. She's the heroine in that. And you've got Ernest Thesiger, who he's in Bride of Frankenstein as one of the doctors.
Yeah, that's right.
And he just about steals the movie in the Old Dark House. And Karloff's in it. Karloff, you know, playing the butler. You know, this
and it's kind of a comedy, right? It's a little
bit. It's a very dark comedy.
Yeah.
And very unsettling. And never been improved on for that sort of thing. You know, and this is the stereotypical, the bridge is washed out, you'll have to stay for the night. This is where it all begins, pretty much. As a matter of fact, at this point, this is like 1932. It's already there. It's ripe for parody. They've already done like the Cat and the Canary and the Bat Whispers, and it's already ripe for parody. The sort of thing where people are caught in a rainstorm and the bridge is washed out, and they stop at this old house, and it's like, oh, you'll have to stay for the night, and all this crazy shit happens. This is like the ultimate version of that. So if you ever get a chance to see it, it's called The Old Dark House.
You showed it to me many, many years ago. I think
it's on DVD now. Anybody can get their hands on it, but for years, I'd say like a good 30 years at least, it was a lost film. And it took extraordinary work to save it. It was one of these things where it had been remade, and it was one of those things where they bought up the original and just buried it. They did that with the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Oh, yeah.
When MGM remade it, they bought the rights to the story, and they buried the original movie. And they didn't want anyone to see it to compare it unfavorably. You know, they didn't want the new one to compare unfavorably with the one they were making, you know.
And who directed that one, John?
That's James Whale.
Again.
So people may know him. There was a movie called Gods and Monsters with Ian McKellen playing James Whale. So his story is kind of now kind of – people are kind of familiar with him. People that wanted to know about James Whale, there's lots of books on him now. But sort of he did the original Frankenstein, and he did The Old Dark House, The Invisible Man. And then he did a lot of non-horror films. You know, he is known for that, but he did a hell of a lot. He did the original Showboat with Paul Robeson. So he could do anything, you know. War movies. He did one of the original versions of The Man in the Iron Mask, you know. And so he could do anything, but he really got to be known for
those.
Horror.
Well, those are his are the best.
And they've never been topped. That's the thing. Him and Todd Browning, who did the original Dracula, it's very tough to top those guys because they really knew what they were
doing. Also did Freaks.
That's right.
Which is – we got to see that. We saw that on the big screen.
Holy Moses. Now, that's an unsettling
film.
That is.
Yeah. Patrick, Justine, do you guys have – are you into the Universal horror films at all?
I've seen like one.
Which
maybe
one?
Two. I saw the
Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
No, I've seen the original Dracula.
Yes.
And I've seen the American Werewolf one. That's American. Is that Universal?
Well, it's Universal, but that's like 1978.
Yeah, I'm not.
You want the 30s ones?
Yeah. I mean, the Wolfman is great.
I've seen portions of it, but
Werewolf
not all
of London. There's some great stuff.
Justine.
Does Teen Wolf not count?
Did does not count.
Well, I'm not.
Because they were asking Universal.
You know
Hammer,
what's funny
right?
about yeah. Teen Wolf, though? Speaking of 80s horror comedies, I just rewatched Fright Night, which I hadn't seen since
the
80s.
Yeah.
That is such a – it's so bad because it's so 80s. That middle section where they like go into an 80s disco and like he's – and it's the funny thing is the girl in peril is – she's I can't remember her name. It's Amanda Bierce, who is the neighbor on Married with Children. But what's great about it is it's kind of a throwback to – it's a kind of a nod to guys like Vincent Price.
Yeah.
Where Roddy McDowall is playing this horror movie host who had been kind of a Peter Cushing guy.
Yeah.
He had been the mighty vampire hunter in the movies, and now he's reduced to this hosting like an Elvira thing.
Yeah.
Where he's hosting like a horror show.
Yeah.
And it's about a kid who thinks his next-door neighbor is a vampire, and he is a vampire. And the vampire is played by Chris Sarandon of – Princess Bride frame, and he's great as a vampire.
Yeah.
The beginning and the end are fantastic.
Yeah,
but the whole middle part is very 80s and very cheesy. Yeah. Once Roddy McDowall gets on the scene, it's great.
Yeah,
it's worth checking out. Yeah, but it didn't hold up as well as I had hoped, but it's worth checking out if you want to watch kind of a fun take on the Fright Night. Have you ever seen that, Justine?
It's on Hulu right now. Oh, I was going to watch it. I just didn't know what it was.
It's very 80s.
They had like those girls on the top of the house.
In the cloud.
Yeah, there's like three girls. And I saw a house, but I didn't know what it was about.
Yeah, it's very 80s, but we're checking out. You would love it just because it's so cheeseball. It's so cheesy.
I'll probably like it.
Have you seen American Werewolf in London, the color one?
No. Yeah. I think that's on – well, Hulu's doing a whole
boy, that's one to check out. I was going to say that is one to check out. That still works. An American Werewolf in London.
And it's a throwback to those old
– it's a throwback. Yeah. And if you like that, then I'd say go back and watch Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
That's the entry drug. If you don't like the Bride of Frankenstein, there's no point in bothering with the other 50 movies.
Yeah.
But boy, if that one pulls you in, there's a whole like 20 years of Universal horror films to check out.
All right. We got another question. This is from the Kung Fu Drive-In podcast. Shout out to – I called him Kung Fu Hustle last time, which is a good name if you ever combine forces with Brent. You're welcome. But at Kung Fu Drive-In, he asks, Have any of us ever tried the Bloody Mary challenge? Do you remember that?
Yes.
And what was – explain the challenge.
You just go into the bathroom – or in a dark room, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And you just do it in front of the mirror where you say Bloody Mary three times.
And what happens?
Well, I don't know. Nothing's ever happened every time I've done it. I've done it with, like, I was probably in middle school, maybe fourth or third grade with all my friends, and we all ran to the bathroom, and we'd say it, and then we'd run out.
Well, what's supposed to happen?
She's supposed to appear in the mirror.
Yeah.
In the mirror.
You're supposed to see her.
Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
How about if you say Candyman three times? Candyman.
I've never done that.
Candyman.
What if you say Beetlejuice three times?
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Candyman was a scary film.
That is a good movie.
Yeah. I thought that was very
effective. Because it's based on a lot of urban legends.
Yeah. Yeah. Candyman.
There used to be, in my elementary school, next to my elementary school, there was this house that was made of bricks. And they had an old greenhouse in the back. Like something you'd see, like, right out of, like, something right out of, like, The Big Sleep, where the, you know, the old man is in the greenhouse.
Yeah.
But it was dilapidated. The windows were all broken out. Ivy had grown through the roof. It was very spooky looking. And at my elementary school, the legend was that Bloody Mary lived in the and it butted right up against the kindergarten. It would butt right up against where the kindergarten – there was like a little
– How convenient.
And so when we were walking home, we'd walk by the front of the school and we would yell – now, we would have to say it 10 times. It wasn't three times.
10 times.
You would have to say it 10 times because you wanted to wake her up and call her. So we would yell, Bloody Mary, 10 times as loud as we could, and then we would just book it. We never waited to see if Bloody Mary would actually appear, but that's where she was supposed to have lived. And so every once in a while, we felt brave on a day home, walking home from school. We would yell Bloody Mary 10 times to try to get her to appear. Never happened.
Yeah.
I love that. Never happened.
I'd say we all just like screamed in the bathroom, but we'd run because we didn't really see anything.
What about light as a feather, stiff as a board? Did you ever try that? Did you ever hear about that? You were supposed to say light as a feather, stiff as a board, and be able to levitate somebody. Uh-huh. And my cousin swore that it worked.
Yeah.
I love that. There's always somebody who swears that it worked. Or usually it's like, I know somebody. I know this guy. It really worked for him. You know? It's never that person. It's always secondhand.
Yeah.
I know this nurse. And one time she did it, and she says she swears to God. It's always like somebody who could like,
So Hulu has Fright Night on there as a comedy.
Yeah, it's supposed to be
a comedy.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
So it's not.
Yeah, it's supposed to be
kind of like American Werewolf is kind of a comedy too.
Yeah, it has funny elements.
It's kind of like funny, but not exactly a comedy. Yeah, and that's what keeps you off balance. You're like, okay, is this the ha ha part, or is this the part where somebody's going to get their head ripped off?
Patrick, did you ever play Bloody Mary?
No.
All right,
but I'll go look in the mirror and say Bloody Mary.
Yeah, go do it right now. He's actually going to do it. He's actually going to do it right now.
Three times.
You have to go in there, close the mirror, close the door,
and turn off the light.
Turn off the light.
Face the mirror.
Face the mirror.
Go to the mirror, boy.
I love you left that. The light on.
I turned it off.
No, turn it off.
You got to wait for her to show up.
I love how quickly you did it.
Yeah, he's like,
Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary. That didn't work.
Yeah.
I waited. She never showed up.
I love that. I tried. She didn't show up.
Don't close the door in case she does show up.
It's closed.
No.
That werewolf movie is also on Hulu, so both of those things.
American Werewolf. Is that the original or there's a remake?
1981.
That's it. That's the one you want to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't recommend that highly enough.
So that was from Jeff. Thanks, Jeff. We all recognize the William Shatner mask worn by Michael Myers in the Halloween films and also Baby Driver. What might have been an equally creepy substitute? And that's from Simon J. Dickey, our good friend Simon, at Simon J. Dickey. What up in Canada, yo? Enjoying some poutine up there?
A Nixon mask.
I'm going time specific, so this is 78.
Oh.
So I know exactly what mine was. And no, it's not the rubber devil mask my brother woke me up in, which
It's not Nixon?
It's not Nixon.
How about Reagan?
I'll tell you what it is right now. You guys have a specific mask that if they made a remake, you would put that mask on Michael Myers?
Oh, for like today?
Yeah. We'll let you guys do that because you're young cats. John's going to know exactly what mask I'm going to. As soon as I mention what it is, he'll know what it is. Anybody?
Steve Bannon.
So a different mask than the hockey mask?
No. Michael Myers' mask has it's a William Shatner mask painted white with the hair.
Yeah.
It's got like the hair.
You can't really tell
from
it's Shatner,
Hollywood. Yeah.
The hockey mask is Jason.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the wrong one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To replace it in the movie?
Yeah. What would be equally... For me, one of those Raggedy Andy masks from the 70s. Just a killer wearing that. If you don't know Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy.
I love them.
Yeah, but they had these. Remember the masks you would buy in the 70s, John, that were just like a plastic, basically highly flammable plastic. You would just put on like a smock, and it would have something painted on the front.
Right.
And then just a mask with a rubber band around the back. It was a face mask.
Yeah.
The Raggedy Andy mask was creepy with the eye holes cut out. Google it. Google 70s Raggedy Andy mask.
Google it.
What about the masks? They're like old school cat and dog masks. They had it in the Breakfast at Tiffany's movie.
Oh, yeah. And even any mask from like the 50s or 60s.
It's just
yeah.
creepy the way they did it.
Yeah. It's like when you see the original Mickey and Minnie at Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those things are horrifying.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they're wearing like black tights.
Yeah.
And they're real clunky looking. It's sick. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty damn scary.
No me gusta para mí. All right.
This one?
Oh, that's a scary one. That is a Raggedy Ann. That's a Raggedy. That's
is
an old.
It?
No, it's not. It's not actually an old.
What
one.
Is that?
That's just creepy. What era did you say, Mario?
Like 70s, 1970s. Look up 1970s Raggedy Ann. Yes! But look up like the costume based on that. Imagine a killer coming.
They're so cute.
No. Evil.
No, I would hug him. Oh, it's like that doll. Remember we just watched that murdering doll?
Renee was talking about
the murdering
doll.
The Conjuring, Annabelle, what was it?
It's a doll that has like a pretty much blank face, and now he's on an island.
What? On an island?
Yeah, but
you're mixing
it?
Stories.
Oh, that's terrifying.
On an island?
I'm on an island.
I just watched it. It was
John, if Donald Duck doesn't wear pants, why does he wrap a towel around his waist when he gets out of the shower?
Yeah, it's one of those.
Because his feathers are wet. God, why do we have to talk about this?
Yeah, Phil from
his
Useless
Debates.
His feathers
are wet, Phil. I saw that and I almost went into a Twitter rage.
Yeah.
Yeah, this doll is, not on an island, but he's in a museum right now, but you're not supposed to take a picture of him because something bad could happen to you, so you have to ask him if you could take a picture of him.
That's in the movie?
And he's like a sailor.
This is a true story.
It's a sailor, oh my God.
It's a sailor window display doll from Germany.
Yeah.
And his name is
Klaus?
Something. No.
Klaus?
It's a true story, though. And then,
it's a true story. You have to ask permission.
So they have people that put notes up like, I took the picture and now I lost my job. And like, please. Like,
it's called Robert the Doll.
Okay, Robert, so it's like a doll. Chain letter. I didn't answer the chain letter and I lost my job.
But the...
I didn't answer the chain letter and I stubbed my toe.
This is what the doll looks like.
Oh, that is creepy.
Yeah.
Google Robert the Doll.
What is it, like 30s German doll?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, those Germans are known for their love.
Wow.
Hey, I'm kidding. We love the Germans. I want to apologize to my wife because I missed her question last time.
Not once.
We missed her response.
A couple times.
So she said the scariest movie she ever saw as a kid was The Hills Have Eyes, the original.
Oh, yeah.
70s Hills Jesus. Have Eyes. So yeah. I wanted to.
That's creepy.
Holy cow. Because... that guy, that's not makeup. That guy has a condition, and that Michael Berryman,
yeah,
that he's got that weird shaped head. That's not makeup. That is the way he
like
looks.
A Rondo Hatton kind of.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is, but yeah, that's. I think he turns up in the second one too. And that's there's something very unsettling. I don't know how you find a guy like that, but the idea that he could be some cannibal out in the middle of the desert, yeah.
So here's a good question for all of us. When we finally adopt the Home Video Hustle podcast, is it done as a collective or is there one main guardian? I feel like – I don't think it's adoption so much as just emerging.
Yeah.
We'll all just be together.
It's a cohabitation.
As a family, yeah.
Anybody.
Well, you know, it'd be awesome if we moved into like Brent and PJ move into the bottom floor of John Sandy's house, right?
Yeah.
And then John lives in his, and then there's another apartment off to the side of John's house, and then it's this like you guys move into that one.
Where are you?
I don't want to live with you guys.
Great.
Wow.
But you guys, well, not that I don't want to live with you guys, but it'll ruin the show because I can't know what you guys are doing. So we have stories when it's podcast time.
No.
Yeah. Can you imagine John Sandy being neighbors with Brent and PJ? It would just be movies all the time.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it makes sense for them to live in the same house. Brent and PJ are going to be watching movies at like 3 a.m. and John's just going to walk down. Oh, what are we watching tonight?
Yeah. He's going to come home from work.
And are you saying this apartment, I'm saying this in quotes, is like a doghouse kind of a thing?
What do you mean?
Is it going to be like a Three's Company thing?
A doghouse?
No, John lives in a...
Are you going to be a
John lives in the top floor. of, are you talking about Mr. Furley? What are you guys talking about?
Are you going to be a Mr. Furley?
What's a doghouse? It's a doghouse?
I don't know where your scene's going.
Well, yeah, thing. I'm assuming there's a doghouse there, but we're calling it an apartment.
What is that? Is that slang for something?
Justine,
a doghouse? She went like this. She went, doghouse.
Yeah. Your joke is falling flat.
Like an apartment. No?
What kind of apartment? All right, what is the most overrated horror movie besides Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity? What is the, this?
I love that. Besides
that?
Blair Witch, because everyone says Blair Witch.
Which, that's from Steve at the Everything I Learned from Movies podcast at EILF Movies.
Saw, Paranormal Activity, all those stupid.
Well, he already said Paranormal Activity.
Oh, Saw.
Most overrated.
It's dumb. It's just gore.
Any of the, I would say any of the gore porn, any of that stuff.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Just cutting off limbs is, you know,
it's not old. Good. Like, and any also, of, it's, like, it's, the haunting ones.
I mean, those are like it's not really horror movies. They're like revulsion movies.
And it's all just like the same thing over and over again. I don't need that in my life.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, there are people that love that
stuff.
All
the Final Destination movies?
Yeah, you know, it's a matter of taste, but I mean, that's a different thing from building an atmosphere and scaring, like, you know, just cutting somebody's arm off or, you know, tying them to a chair and putting a blowtorch in their face. That's not – there's no art to that, you know? That, to me, I mean, people love that stuff, but to me, like Hostel and all that, it's just
– yeah.
No, it's a waste. Little,
you know, yeah.
I would say those are all – that genre is just –
gore porn.
Well, they called it gore porn, and it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of kind of wound itself out.
Now, here's some thinkers. I'm going to need your help on this, Patrick and Justine, because this is
I turned my brain off.
This is out of my wheelhouse. Where does Tailspin fit into the Jungle Book cinematic universe? I mean, yeah, it's Baloo and King Louie, but is it really?
That's very confusing when I saw that.
They sound the same and have the same names, but come on, where did Baloo learn to fly a plane? When did he go to the city? Who are these people?
I mean, I guess he learned
that's
it.
From why am I watching
from the man
this?
Cub?
That is.
I just figured it's like a great grandkid, and so they look alike.
No, I would say it's after Jungle Book because he would have had to learn it from the man cub.
I've never seen that. Are they wearing clothes and all that?
By the way, that's from What Am I Watching? And that's at WAIW Cast.
So they're wearing clothes and they're flying planes.
I'm sorry, at WA.
I just think he looks like his
WAIWT cast.
Great grandpa.
And they call him Baloo?
No, they have different names, but
oh, but it just looks like Baloo.
Is it Baloo? It's not Baloo on Tailspin?
I'm pretty sure it is.
It's just a bear that looks like Baloo, right?
And it's the same voice actor.
Kind of like, well, Phil Harris.
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah. But I mean, they're doing Phil Harris probably.
It's somebody doing
and
Phil
King
Harris.
Louis is also flying a plane?
It's John So.
It's an orangutan flying a plane?
John So, like, it's from 99.
Yeah, but it's Christopher Walken's King Louie.
Yeah. That was pretty crazy.
It was
no,
crazy to see.
They still have the same names.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's definitely after Jungle Book. Because
well, the thing is,
it's probably after Jungle Book 2 when that girl comes in.
Because Disney's been, I mean, like Robin Hood. Remember that? There was a bear that looked exactly like Baloo, but it's Little John.
Yeah,
and the snake is Sir Hiss. It's not Ka.
That was a great movie. Don't
the series that movie. Centers on the adventures of Bush Pilot.
Their business.
Baloo the Bear.
It is Baloo.
Whose air cargo freight business, Baloo's Air Service, is purchased by Rebecca Cunningham upon default on delinquent bills. Of course he doesn't pay the bills. What does he pay? The bear necessities. Thank you.
Look for the bear necessities.
I'm telling you, it's after Jungle Book 2.
Does he eat ants? You better believe it.
You better believe it.
It's after Jungle
hey,
Book
Hey, Tailspin.
Two. No, it'd have to be before.
No, because he has to learn to fly the plane.
But what about...
There's like been a regression. He's back to being a bear, right?
Wow, this basically... This
but Shere Khan... But
is Shere Khan there?
Why are they getting along? Something happened.
Why is Shere Khan getting along?
Yeah.
Because he got his ass kicked.
What, so the tiger's in there too?
Yeah.
Really?
The pussy got tamed. What do you expect?
I see.
You know what's great about this
it's
show?
That kind of movie.
What? Yeah. I don't even know what I was going to say. I was going to make a dumb joke and I forgot. It's basically the... They basically made a cartoon version of Tales of the Golden Monkey. Remember that show? Google that.
It sounds like only angels have wings.
I'm just
so Cary Grant is played by a bear.
That was such a great question, though. Thank you for actually making us think about
and
that.
And making us rage.
Why am I watching this?
You know what kind of question that is? That's like in McDonaldland. How is it Mayor McCheese eats cheeseburgers?
Yeah, he's
that's
a cannibal.
Like he's a cannibal, yeah. Yeah.
Cannibal. It's a cannibal holocaust.
And the cop has got a Big Mac for a head.
And let me ask you this, guys.
My beard just got stroked.
All right.
Is that a euphemism?
Here we go.
No, it actually got scrubbed.
I see.
Here we go.
I think I need to call.
Here's Renee.
This is a useless debate. Ask if you had to make one horror movie into a children's book, what would it be? One horror movie into a kid's book, which would it be?
The Hannibal. People Under the Stairs.
People Under the Stairs?
The People Under the Stairs.
Hannibal.
Why'd you pick that one?
No, I just picked the most crazy movie I could think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Human Centipede. Make that into a kid's book.
Hannibal, everyone tastes good.
Yeah, Hannibal.
What was the name?
Adaptable one.
Everybody poops. What?
Yeah, the people under the stairs that aren't Harry Potter.
Yeah.
That's what you would call Harry right. Potter's cousins. That's right. That's right. If you, one horror movie that you could make into a kid's book.
Yeah, everybody tastes great.
Oh, man. That's
or people smell like pork.
How about Hansel and Gretel, the Witch Hunters? You could make that into a kid's book.
Van Helsing?
Van Helsing. Mm. Remember that? That dopey movie, it was like Jeremy Renner and they're like Hansel and Gretel as adults.
No, it was Hugh Jackman.
How about
they're adults hunting witches?
Yeah. Dracula, Always Thirsty.
There you go.
Well, yeah, I don't know. That's hard to. If you could make, is there okay? Now here's the flip side of that useless debate. We're not that imaginative. I apologize. Well, if I had to make one horror movie into a kid's book,
Hop on Pop.
No. Think about it. What is a story that you? It would have to be a story that would be simple enough to grab a kid. And then, to kind of draw them in, and then all of a sudden.
I think you're just overthinking it. I think it needs to be just, like, the worst horror movie to just appeal to kids.
Just like Saw or something?
Yeah. Or like Predator. Hide and seek. Come find me.
Oh, Predator would actually be... That's not a horror movie. That would work. Like come Alien. Find me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alien already has a kid's book.
Does it?
Yeah. Something
about
the
Xenomorph. Yeah, where they're feeding the cats, and he's just... Yeah. It's like a friendly alien.
I love it. What about...
Chucky.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would actually.
But that's like the easy transition.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah.
That's already a kid's.
He's there just playing.
That's already a kid's movie.
No, what I don't understand in Phil's question, I am overthinking it.
The Shining, Johnny Goes on Vacation.
Is it a horror movie? But is it a scary kid's book, or we adapt it into a kid's book?
We're adapting it into
a
kid's book.
So it has a happy ending.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for the villain.
You should. Can you clarify the question?
No, it's too late.
It's too late.
But I just think we're overthinking it.
But here's another one. Home Video Hustle asks us, is there any non-horror movie that you could rewrite into a horror movie if you could?
Say that again.
Oh, yeah. Mrs. Doubtfire. Remember that trailer?
Oh, yeah.
A non-horror movie that you could turn into...
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hook.
That's already a horror show.
It's a good movie.
A non-horror movie you could make into...
Cat in the Hat. Like that trailer?
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
I've seen that
Someone edited the Cat in the Hat movie as the It trailer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you kind of like, oh, wow.
It's
like,
creepy.
It is creepy.
Yeah.
Years and years ago, somebody did they re-edited a trailer for The Shining, making it into kind of like a warm comedy.
Yeah.
A rom-com.
A man and his son.
Yeah.
And they even played like a Peter Gabriel song underneath it. I think Salisbury Hill or something.
I love it.
And it was perfect. And at the end, they had the announcer going, The Shining. You know, it's like a boy and his son. The Shining. You'll love it. You'll laugh. You'll cry.
What, like a non-horror movie for me that you could easily turn into a horror movie? Gosh.
Why not Toy Story?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's perfect.
Come Toy Story 3.
The toys, just the toys coming to life, period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be a Twilight Zone episode, yeah.
Well, you think about it, any animated movie could easily,
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it could be into a horror
Remember
movie.
The Twilight Zone movie? They did the sending him to the cornfield.
Yeah.
And it was all animated. It was like, what's the logical conclusion of a kid turning you into an animated cartoon?
Yeah.
You know, coming out of the jack-in-a-box and all these, like, there was like a crazy, like, Tasmanian devil. What would the consequences of that be if it really existed,
That's a great question. What's a non-horror movie? Toy Story would probably be – that's very good.
It's easy.
Because think of anything that – yeah, anything that could happen in an animated movie would be horrifying if it happened in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Up. Yeah. Up is probably my favorite.
Up is already a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you attach balloons to your house and it floats away and you can't get it back down.
Mm-hmm.
No, man loses wife, goes into clinical depression, steals a child, and then escapes in a house.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
You're right.
Dude, that is exactly, you nailed it.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that one's
there you go. That's it. Up.
Flubber.
Someone just goes nuts.
The blob.
I think it's just easy to do with Robin Williams movies.
Yeah, Robin Williams movies is kind of easy.
Ever since Insomnia, right?
Like, you just take away the laugh track and it's It's kind of dark.
One stop photo. I mean, he did a
one stop photo. That was creepy.
Oh, that was
really scary.
Is that 1 hour photo?
One hour photo. Yeah.
What about Bob? What about Bob as a horror movie?
You could do that.
You could do that as a total horror movie.
Because you can't get rid of him.
You can't get rid of him.
He's always there. He's always coming back.
He's insinuating himself in with the kids wife and all that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would probably be.
You could just add music in, eerie music into certain scenes. Yeah. You don't have to edit it per se.
It's just Bill Murray being creepy. Yeah. What about Bob? That's going to be my pick. What about Bob? Anybody else have anyone they want to throw out there?
That's hard.
I say, what about Bob?
Beethoven.
Yeah. Oh, it's Cujo.
There you go.
It's been done. It's Cujo.
It's Cujo. Cujo, shout out to USC Carlos, Robert Carlos. He mentioned that was the scariest movie when he was a kid, and I missed that one because I did it on another Twitter feed. Are there any horror movies in existence that would actually give you nightmares as an adult? Is there any movie you've seen that give you nightmares as an adult? Again, I think it's just all the really hardcore gore stuff.
Yeah.
We've talked about it a million times. Anything that can actually happen,
right?
Yeah, that's more
like the Lovely Bones. Or
have you guys seen? I just saw it recently. Nocturnal Animals.
No,
I've heard of it.
Amy Adams.
It's a disturbing movie.
Is it? Yeah. I gotta check it out.
Renee's like, is it? I'm in.
Amy Adams.
Add to my list. Yeah.
Amy Adams.
Amy
creepy.
Adams and Isla.
Jake Gyllenhaal, isn't it?
Isla Fisher too. Two redheads.
Oh, that's right.
And they were also sisters in... No, they weren't. Who was Isla Fisher's sister in Wedding Crashers?
Oh, that's Rachel McAdams.
That's it. I used to get Rachel McAdams and Amy Adams confused because of the names. They don't look anything alike. Now I've got it down. Mm. One was in Sherlock Holmes and one was
right. They're both great actors.
They're both very good.
And they're both knockouts.
Does anybody have any other horror movies that you would actually give you nightmares as an adult? They would bother you.
I'm still on movies that I could turn into horror movies. That's like a good question, so it's got me.
The
Thriller music video.
Well, we really know what gets to Justine now. She really. Mm-hmm. And it's from the time Vincent Price. Is it just Vincent Price's voice, or is it the zombies that get you? What is it?
The old school zombies are pretty.
I mean, the dancing zombies.
If I were to actually see them like out in the street, I probably wouldn't get out of this building.
But what makes you turn it off is the Vincent Price voice.
Because why would he talk? Because you listen to it when you're driving, so you're by yourself and you hear that. It's like,
You think he's in the back seat?
Yeah. I'm like, shut up.
Just reciting it to you? Yeah, that's it.
Stop talking to me.
We'll have to find one of those commercials where he's advertising. He did all those commercials. There's one for Hangman. I know that's on there. If you type in Hangman, there was a game called Hangman, which you don't need a game for. You know, it's like a Milton Bradley thing. All you need is a pad and pencil. But,
yeah, what's the point?
But there was a great commercial for that where he's going.
I remember.
It's got a great punchline.
Oh, my gosh. I remember this commercial. Do you remember this game, John?
Also the shrunken apple heads.
Welcome. Please feel right at home. I want to teach you a game called, amusingly enough, Stay Alive. It's quite deadly. To win, you eliminate your opponents like this, or they eliminate you. It's great fun. I'd be happy to teach you how to play, but there's no one left. I'm the sole survivor.
Oh, my gosh. Stay alive. I already want to change the channel.
Why?
Over this.
We have found out that Vincent Price's voice really creeps around.
Here's one for you, Justine.
Hello, I'm Vincent Price. For many years now, mankind and his offspring have been searching for an alternative to peanut butter and jelly. After employing the latest methods in technology, the Peter Paul Candy Company has found the alternative to peanut butter and jelly. Peanut butter with no jelly. Pure, creamy peanut butter dotted with crispies, covered with pure milk chocolate, but no jelly.
It still creeps me out. What
I'm
is
sure
it?
You're as pleased as I am.
He throws in the
pleased
little
as I am.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's so great.
So creepy. We gotta find peanut butter.
We got to find him as Egghead on Batman. You
know? That's great.
You could turn Leon into a horror movie.
Man and child go on murderous rampage.
It's already a horror.
It's already a kind of a horror movie. All right.
The Professional.
That's next question. So we didn't have any more.
That's it.
We couldn't think of any more for that, huh? Okay, so this is our last question for the day. Comes from our friends at the Sci-Fi Drive-In podcast. And I always have to read their handle slowly. At SFDFDI podcast. Sci-fi, double feature, drive-in. What's your ideal versus movie, and what's your dream versus movie? So Freddy versus Jason, yeah. Alien versus Predator. What's your ideal versus movie? Like, which is your favorite one? And I'm going to cheat. I have an answer for this, but I'm going
to
cheat it.
When you think about it, they're all pretty bad, because by the time you get to a versus movie, you've used up all the ideas.
What about all the horror, the Universal ones, like Frankenstein versus Dracula? Or,
you know, that's the funny thing. That's not a particularly good movie. Frankenstein meets the Wolfman is not a particularly good movie.
You don't like Glenn Strange as the monster?
There's great stuff. You know what's funny about that movie? you're playing with fire when you ask me about Universal monster movies, because I could go on forever. What's funny about – we always talk
– I know. What it is. Frankenstein is wearing a leather jacket.
That's right. No, Alex and I, my buddy Alex and I always talk about this.
Your best friend, Alex.
God, Alex and I have known each other since like 72.
Yeah, sorry, Pat Hazel.
1970.
You're out.
But we always talk about how Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. The first 20 minutes is a very effective sequel to the Wolfman. There's some really creepy stuff in that.
So you don't have any favorite versus movie, John?
Oh, you know.
King Kong versus Godzilla, nothing.
Those are campy favorites. It's fun to watch King Kong versus Godzilla. It's not a great movie, you know. Frankenstein meets the Wolfman is fun. It's not a great movie. I can't think of one that works because, by the time you get to that.
Here's why I don't like King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah.
Because Godzilla loses, technically. Well, he doesn't. It's really a draw.
There was a story that it depended on which country you saw it
in. That is an urban legend. That
like
is
Japan's
not true.
Got a different ending. Godzilla wins, and America. Yeah. So was that an urban legend?
That is an urban legend.
I'll give you one. I'll give you a really quick one. My favorite then would be Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Is that a versus though?
Yeah, and it's a great one. It's a great one because it's truly funny. Before Young Frankenstein, that was the benchmark for a comedy thriller.
What do you guys got for your verses?
None.
Alien versus Predator, any of those?
Those are all bad movies.
Jason versus
about Predator versus Invisible Man.
No, Predator would
still see.
He would still see him?
The body heat.
You know what they should have done is the Amazing Colossal Man meets the Incredible Shrinking Man.
Yeah, that would have been a good one.
I love that. Yeah, that would have been a good one.
You know what my favorite versus movie is? What's honestly, I have two ideas for good. This would be my ideal, but my favorite versus, it's not an entire movie, but I waited my whole life to see it, and I finally saw it in the 1980s in a sequence. There was a sequence in Who Framed Roger Rabbit where I saw Daffy Duck take on Donald Duck.
Oh, that's a great sequence.
That is one of my all-time favorite
versus. That's a wonderful sequence.
So it's not a movie per se, but that is my favorite versus.
And that's something you never thought you'd see.
Exactly.
Donald Duck and Daffy Duck in the same scene in the same movie.
They got it all worked out, and look how great it worked out.
And that was a great sequence.
Yeah.
And what I love is Daffy Duck says, this guy's got a speech impediment. I can't understand a word he's saying.
And it's that 1940s Daffy Duck.
They nailed it. You can thank Richard Williams for that. They nailed it. That's 40s Daffy and 40s Donald.
Yep. That's one of my favorite versus moments of all time.
Yeah, that's right.
Everything you wanted to see ever.
Yeah.
I would say my second would probably be King Kong versus Godzilla. I know it's not the best Godzilla movie, but it's just the idea that, someone finally comes and challenges Godzilla. And what's funny is how closely it follows the original Kong story.
Yeah.
Because they're on the island and they have the offensively dressed natives. And and then he goes on that rampage in the village and he fights an octopus. And the Kong, it's a terrible suit.
That's what it is. It's a terrible suit.
It's a terrible looking suit. But they basically just lay Godzilla in the original Kong story, and it works for a little bit, and it's a pretty good battle. You get a good battle. So
did anybody ever see Jason meets Freddy?
I never was particularly fond of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I always wanted to see Michael Myers and Jason kind of meet, but I'm glad Michael Myers never got into that, because out of all those movies, he's kind of the one
keeps it kind of pure.
Hey, Renee, do you have a favorite? You're big on versus movie, man. You're this is your wheelhouse. What's your favorite?
Well, actually, once you think about it, like the versus movies genre thing, all the movies come out bad. Like you want to see what these
I
characters.
I know what your favorite one is, though.
It's not BVS.
It is Batman v Superman.
It is a good Batman movie. I like it, but it's not my favorite versus movie.
It's not a good Batman movie, Renee. He kills people.
It's okay. He has wrong sometimes.
Why'd you say Martha? Why'd you say Martha? Sorry. I always have to say that.
It like you know because Alien vs Predator wasn't great.
No,
you know, and we've been waiting to see it. Yeah,
there were two of them. I think I took my nephew to see both of those, and I was kind of like, ugh, it's too bad Alien came to this.
Turned to his nephew and said, "I'm sorry."
Yeah. And then Freddy vs Jason, like other people were waiting for that one, and that came out, and that didn't.
But it's kind of true. By the time you get to that, you're about eight movies in, and you're like, okay, we're out of ideas.
Well, what else can we do?
But I don't really have a favorite versus movie because they're all not great. But there is one that I do want to see, and they have it in a comic book, but obviously it's not going to be in the movies per se, is RoboCop versus Terminator.
Ooh.
I always wanted to see that.
Yeah. Who do you think would win?
Ooh, okay. I want
RoboCop to win.
Is it the T-1000? Because that's liquid metal.
It's not the T-1000. It's regular Terminator.
It's a T-800.
I would say RoboCop because he murdered a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
More so than Terminator did. And Terminator, you know, he got morals really quickly.
If you guys want to see a really interesting fan film that's a versus film, and it's actually really good, it predates the Christopher Nolan trilogy. It was like one of the few times I've ever seen a fan film work really well. It's basically the Batman versus Predator. It's called Batman Dead End.
Oh, yeah.
And the Joker on that is played by Andrew Koenig, who is Walter Koenig Chekhov. It's his son who has passed away since. But he plays a really good Joker in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman's chasing Joker down this dark alley. And then all of a sudden, Joker disappears and an alien jumps down.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the aliens. Mm-hmm. And then a predator shows up because he's fighting the alien.
Mm-hmm.
So then Batman and the alien kind of take off, they face off. So check it out. It's a really good fan film. So it's called Batman Dead End. Check that out. My ideal versus movie is either going to be one of two things. It's either going to be you have a crossover in the Marvel and Batman, or the Marvel and DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see that. Mm-hmm. Make that happen.
That comic, Spider-Man versus Superman.
Yeah. I want to see that. We combine genres and we do the Jaegers from Pacific Rim take on Godzilla.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah.
That's what I want to see.
How about the Jaegers versus the Transformers?
Is Michael Bay involved? Who's directing?
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of this noise.
That's Pacific Rim 2, right?
Oh, yeah.
There are people that have been complaining about that.
I was underwhelmed with that.
We talked about it on the show.
It looks too much like Transformers.
It's too bright and happy. It's not what Pacific Rim is.
It's not raining.
I was rewatching Pacific Rim 2, the first one, and I realized that the reason why they probably didn't do what this one's doing is because it was easier to do it at night. The shading and lighting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this one, they're fighting in the daytime.
It won't look as good.
It doesn't look good.
I don't need that. But they did do a cool daytime scene in Pacific Rim, which was when the monsters first destroying the city and almost killing that girl.
But you don't see the Jaegers in the daytime. Only when, Gypsy Danger?
No, when they show that one in Australia. It's fighting one in Australia during the day.
But it was a cost-saving move.
Yeah.
But, like film noir, it ends up enhancing the look of the movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it does.
We're doing it because it's a budgetary thing, but
the lighting
looks
really good when they're fighting at night and stuff.
That is the problem with that trailer. You're going, I don't want to see
that. Iron Giant joins forces with Gypsy Danger, and they fight Godzilla and some kaiju.
How about Johnny Sacco and his giant robot?
Yes.
Fight Gigantor.
How about Ultraman?
Ultraman
shows up. Whatever happened to Johnny Sacco and Giant Robot?
It's like the one thing that hasn't been remade.
All right.
And Gigantor hasn't been remade.
Well, that's my – do you guys have any versus movies you want to see? Is there any team-ups you want to see? No? Harry Potter joins forces with the wolves from Twilight and
the wolves from Twilight?
No.
How about Sherlock Holmes versus The Shadow?
I'll tell you what. If
that's not bad, John.
I got a response.
Yeah, I like that.
Sherlock Holmes wins.
when you're talking to Mario, Sherlock Holmes beats everybody.
Yeah, he does.
How about the Hulk?
Sir. That nose is prosthetic.
By the way, if you want to speaking of versus, Lauren D. Esselman wrote a book called Sherlock Holmes versus Dracula. Sounds silly.
Yeah.
Actually very good if you can find it. I think it's out of print, but if you can find it, he basically takes the Jonathan Harker diaries and then fills in the days that aren't accounted for in the diary.
Mm-hmm.
And picks it up as Holmes is investigating what's going on.
Ah.
In,
who won?
Interesting.
Who do you think?
Spoilers.
Was it a draw?
Sherlock Holmes always wins. How about Sherlock Holmes versus Batman?
Sherlock Holmes wins.
How about Sherlock Holmes versus Sherlock Holmes?
Sherlock Holmes wins because all he says is, you are my spawn.
How about how about Sherlock Holmes versus Gigantor?
Sherlock Holmes wins.
He just unplugs
Sherlock
him. Holmes wins. He just unplugs him. He's all, elementary, Watson. I unplugged him.
By the way, speaking of trailers, I just wanted to say my daughter pointed something out watching the Last Jedi trailer.
Uh-huh.
She saw the last scene when he says, when Rey says, I just want someone to show me how to, you know, deal with whatever she says.
Yeah.
And Kylo Ren reaches out his hand. Yeah. My daughter says, the last time he reached out his hand, he killed his father. So think about that. The last time Kylo Ren reached his hand out like that, someone died.
Also, they accidentally early released the book.
No.
Like the screen adaptation for Last Jedi.
Do
we know the spoilers?
They're out there. I haven't read anything about it.
How does accidentally?
They didn't accidentally.
It's like somebody got their hands on it.
It was on Twitter.
Right?
Wow.
They wouldn't put out the book. I mean, somebody got their hands on it, right?
Yeah.
Like somebody that works at the warehouse or something got their hands on the book.
Someone.
That sucks. It's crazy. There's people that would want to know that before they went in.
I know. Or some people will just do that just to spoil it. They'll just do it, not even just to read what happens.
They're trolls.
They're trying to, yeah.
Hmm.
Because they know how Star Wars fans are.
Yeah. You know?
There was already a book written in 2013.
That might be it.
Called The Last Jedi.
The title.
Oh, it came out in 2013?
But it's the title.
It might be like the original screen adaptation.
No. That might, maybe, yeah.
It sounds like they took the title.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
No. Please don't. We don't do fake news on this podcast. Please don't ever do that again.
Wow.
That's what it is. Damn.
Cold-hearted.
What a jerk.
Cold-blooded.
I love you guys.
If you don't like it, there's the door.
Wow. Thank you for making your appearance in the last 45 minutes. We're going to get roasted for you not talking at all.
Oh, that's right. They're going to rip us a new asshole.
Really?
She was on her phone the whole time.
Okay.
She talked a lot last episode, so she's tired.
Yeah, we don't let her go home. She just stays in here.
Because we're going to get hell for not letting her talk.
No, I'm going to get hell. Yeah. But you know what? I don't care.
It's your show.
It's my show. You don't like it? There's the off button. That's our new one. You don't like it? Fast forward until you hear Justine's voice.
But you know, if you do that, you'll miss out on the nerdy stuff.
Yeah, the nerdy stuff.
The nerdy stuff.
Say it, Justine.
Again, it's different now.
You can just give it to us in your normal voice.
She doesn't have a cold anymore.
Not the same.
Nerdy stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be all high-pitched and
stuff. I like nerdy stuff.
The nerdy stuff.
Pretend like you have a sore throat. Nerdy stuff.
All right, well, normally I would insert some scary music, but we want to say goodbye to our friend Fats Domino. Why are you laughing? Because it's our friend.
Because you paused. You're like, who am I talking about?
Our friend Fats Domino, and I was trying to form a thought in my head. It's very hot. I was up early. I'm very tired.
I see.
We spent a long time talking. I was having to come up with answers.
I get the picture. We're kind of winding down here.
Winding down. My green tea isn't helping.
What are you going to do for Halloween?
But I'll probably watch Game 7 of the World Series.
Oh, that's right. That's going to be on Halloween. That means that everybody trick-or-treating that night is all, and nobody's answering the door.
Right?
Yeah, please don't bother me.
Starts at 5. Yeah,
please don't come to my door. We want to say goodbye. So, this is kind of a little... This is a little nod to the Dodgers as well. We're going to close out with a little song from Fats Domino, his version of My Blue Heaven, which is what we refer to Dodger Stadium as. So without further ado, here's Mr. Fats Domino. So for Justine, for Patrick, for John, for special guest Renee, and for myself, we say this transmission ends now and fight the power.
When Wilpa will call, and even his night.